Good day and welcome everyone to the Royal London Full Year Results 2021 conference call hosted by Daniel Cazoux. My name is Shreya and I'm your event manager for today. During this presentation, your lines will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key *0 on your telephone and the coordinator will be happy to assist you. I would like to advise all parties that this conference is being recorded for replay purposes. And now I'd like to hand it over to Daniel. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning and thank you everybody for joining us. For those of you that I haven't spoken to before, my name is Daniel Cazoux and I'm the Group Chief Financial Officer for Royal London. I'm joined today by Leslie Mitchell, Group Financial Controller, Anthony Lee, Group Chief Actuary, and Rob Ferguson, Group Treasurer. This morning we issued our 2021 annual results announcement, and during this call I'll be referring to the presentation we emailed to those of you who pre-registered for this event. The presentation and a copy of our results announcement are also available on the website. So moving to the first page, which is page number 2 in the pack, I'll outline the agenda for this morning's call. I'll start by taking you through an overview of the performance of our business in 2021 before going through the key financial metrics, new business performance and the strength of our balance sheet and capital position. I'll then open up to questions. But before we get into the detail, I'd like to start by providing some context and highlight some of the key points from today's announcement. So moving to page 3. Following the success of the COVID-19 vaccination rollout over the past year and the subsequent easing of restrictions, we've started to see recovery in many aspects of society and the economy during 2021. Throughout, our primary focus has remained on how we respond quickly to customer and financial advisor needs, whilst at the same time protecting the health and well-being of our colleagues. Our strategy, built around being an insight-led modern mutual, which is focused on growing sustainably, has continued to serve us well. Last year, we introduced a new operating model, and we're reporting on our 3 new business units for the first time. Our UK asset management and Irish businesses have all performed well, with all 3 delivering increased operating profit and new business volumes. Despite the challenging market conditions, our capital position remains robust, with our key capital metrics improving. Our investor view capital cover ratio has increased to 216%, and our regulatory view capital cover ratio to 173%. We reached record assets under management of £164 billion, driven by positive market movements and the continued strength of our investment performance. That investment performance helped to attract flows into a wide range of investment strategies, in particular, ongoing demand for our sustainable funds. We have continued to invest in our business, as well as focus on improving the cost efficiency and flexibility of the services we provide our long-standing policyholders, which account for a significant proportion of our customer base. I'll cover this in a little more detail shortly. Our performance has also allowed us to maintain the same level of profit share allocation rates to eligible customers, boosting the value of their savings whilst also continuing to invest in our business for their long-term benefit. Moving on to page 4 and looking at a few of the key business highlights from each of our businesses. So starting in the UK, all of our business lines have performed well, with new business sales up 12%. Our Govern range, which is the default fund offering for many of our workplace pension schemes, surpassed the £50 billion milestone for the first time. And in April, we acquired WealthWizards, a financial technology platform, to help address the financial advice gap in the UK market, as there is a growing need for cost-effective and scalable technology-enabled financial advice solutions. We will be increasingly embedding the technology into advisor businesses, as well as using the platform to support our workplace pension schemes with their members' financial guidance needs. We also purchased a 30% stake in Responsible Group, a leading UK provider in the growing later life lending market, as that becomes an increasingly core part of financial planning. In asset management, the increase in the assets we manage was driven by positive market movements as well as net flows as a result of our continued strong investment performance. 99% of our actively managed funds outperformed their benchmarks over a 3-year period. We benefited from strong flows into our sustainable funds as we solidified our position as a leader in this area as more and more customers look to invest responsibly. We are continuing to invest in the breadth and depth of our asset management business, expanding into Europe while developing our propositions, including strengthening our property team. In Ireland, new business sales were up 35% as we maintained our position as the number one protection provider in the intermediated market with a 28% market share. And later this year, we'll be looking to build on that position when we enter the Irish pensions market. Turning now to page 5 and two key projects for the group. In 2021, we started writing annuities for maturing CIS policies with guaranteed annuity options. These were previously transferred externally by the Annuity Bureau. This allows us to retain customers while offering them the Royal London service they expect. As a result, we do not pass the revenue stream outside of the group, and the longevity risk diversifies well in the main fund. We have received PRA approval for a matching adjustment, and the initial £300 million portfolio has grown to £450 million at the end of the year. Now that we have this core in place, we'll be looking at additional blocks of business within the group that can be supported by the MA portfolio, as well as the range of assets that we use to back the liabilities. Turning to our legacy simplification program, an important element of this program is our fund consolidation workstream, which is merging 6 closed with profit sub-funds into the Royal London main fund. These consolidations drive financial benefits both for customers via enhancements to their policies and to Royal London through diversification benefits and a closed fund contribution to compensate for the capital charge. 4 fund consolidations were successfully implemented in 2021, and we are on track for the final 2 funds to be consolidated by the end of 2022. We are also migrating books of business from a number of aging legacy systems to a small number of more modern, flexible target systems. And in total, we have now migrated 3.2 million policies. These initiatives delivered 2 significant gains in 2021, totaling £58 million. £32 million from investment in higher yielding long-term assets, allowing us to recognise a gain from the change to the discount rate, and a £26 million contribution from the consolidation of the 4 closed funds. Moving on, page 6 sets out the key financial highlights from our performance. I will touch on new business sales, assets, flows, and our balance sheet and capital position in more detail shortly. But as pandemic restrictions have been eased and customer, advisor, and market confidence starts to return, we have seen an improvement across all our key reporting metrics. Group operating profit before tax more than tripled to £133 million compared to £41 million in the previous year. And statutory profit before tax for the year also increased up to £192 million against £131 million in the previous reporting period. A full breakdown of the components of operating profit is set out in the announcement with a summary in the appendix to this presentation. Our capital position improved over the year with surplus increasing from £2.3 billion to £2.8 billion on both a regulatory view and investor view basis, and it is also reflected in the improvement in cover ratios. As I referenced earlier, we have maintained profit share allocation rates, with the total amount of profit share payout increasing to £169 million, in line with the growth in the aggregate value of eligible policies. Maintaining the level of allocations, as well as our ongoing investment in the business, demonstrates Royal London's resilience during challenging times and our commitment to delivering value to customers. Turning now to page 7 and new business sales. Life and pensions new business sales were up 12% at £9.6 billion, primarily driven by continued strong advisor support for our protection range in both the UK and Ireland and for UK workplace pensions. Firstly, focusing on the UK, total new business sales were up nearly 12% to £9.4 billion. Individual pensions new business sales increased to £4.8 billion, marginally up on 2020. While individual pension sales remain below pre-pandemic levels, we have seen a steady recovery in this area during the year as our customers have had more confidence in saving for their retirement. The new business margin for individual pensions reduced slightly from 1.8% to 1.6% as costs increased due to inflation and ongoing regulatory requirements. Workplace pensions new business sales grew by 30% to £3.2 billion as high levels of recruitment activity increased new entrants into existing schemes, more companies changed scheme provider, and we saw increased levels of new company scheme setups. The new business margin in this area fell from 1.1% to 0.9%, reflecting a change in business mix with a higher proportion of lower margin new schemes written in the year. Sales of UK protection products grew 5% to £1.25 billion as we continue to enhance our products as a result of ongoing customer awareness of the value of protection through the pandemic. In turn, new business margin for UK protection increased from 2.3% to 3.1%. In Ireland, new business sales increased by 35% to £185 million, driven by continued strong demand across all products, in particular term assurance and mortgage protection products, with new business margin increasing from 8.8% to 9.2%. Overall, new business margin across our business was flat at 1.7%. I'd now like to turn to assets and flows on page 8. Assets under management reached £164 billion, an increase of over 10% over the year. This increase in assets was supported by positive market movements, with global stock markets performing strongly during 2021 as economies gradually reopened and government stimulus buoyed sentiment. Internal net inflows decreased to £915 million, reflecting higher outflows in our pensions, individual pensions business, while external net inflows increased substantially to £4.4 billion, driven by higher institutional inflows. As I mentioned earlier, our sustainable funds continue to attract flows and have enjoyed huge success over the past few years, winning awards and reflecting strong performance with ever-increasing demand for investing in this area. So moving on to page 9, responsible investment. We are focused on helping to build financial resilience and supporting a fair transition to a sustainable world. By bringing these elements together, we aim to protect the standard of living for this and future generations. As highlighted at our interim results in August, we set short and long-term carbon reduction targets for our investment portfolio, aiming to reduce the carbon equivalent emissions from the investment portfolio by 50% by 2030 and to be net zero by 2050. This year we've refined our approach to stewardship, voting and engagement priorities across our investments. Our revised policy outlines how we monitor and engage with investee companies, exercise our voting rights, and manage actual and potential conflicts of interest. During 2021, we took a significant step forward by transitioning the RLAM passive equity funds and a number of segregated equity mandates into ESG-tilted equity solutions. This essentially increases holdings of companies with better climate and ESG practices and reduces holdings in the companies which are not managing these issues as well as their peers. We transitioned £23 billion of indexed equities in our government range to improve their carbon intensity, reducing their carbon footprint by 16% by the end of 2021. Across the whole investment portfolio, the carbon intensity of the equity and fixed income holdings, which represent 63% of our portfolio, reduced by 35%. Our investment philosophy is based on engagement over divestment. We engage with the companies we invest in to understand how they plan to navigate the transition to a low-carbon economy and promote the need for a just transition, and, where needed, try to positively influence their behaviour. We are a large investor in the energy utility sector, accounting for around a third of the carbon emissions in our investment portfolio. During 2021, in partnership with Fence Provident Foundation, we continued active discussions with a number of utility companies about the trends transforming the power sector. And this year, five of the high emission companies we engaged with published just transition plans alongside their broader decarbonisation plans. In addition to a portfolio emissions reduction target, we've also set targets to reduce the emissions from our own operations. And details of these can be found in the climate section of our annual report accounts. Moving to our balance sheet and page 10. Our total investment portfolio, including investment property, increased to £118.1 billion, primarily driven by positive returns on equity securities held by our OEIC investment funds. Our financial investment portfolio remains well diversified across a number of financial instrument classes, with the majority invested in equity securities and fixed income assets. A significant portion of our investment portfolio was in high-quality assets with a credit rating of A or above as at the end of the year. In our non-linked portfolio, 85% of our non-linked debt securities and 71% of our non-linked corporate bonds had a credit rating of A or better. There have been no significant defaults in our corporate bond portfolio. At 31 December 2021, £450 million of assets were ring-fenced to back annuities and liabilities, with this portfolio of assets including a mix of corporate bonds and commercial real estate loans. As at the 24th of February 2022, we held approximately £90 million in securities issued by Russian or Ukrainian companies, of which approximately 74% is held in unit-linked portfolios. This represents less than 0.1% of our investment portfolio. On page 11, we provide more detail about our capital cover ratios. Managing our capital base effectively is a key priority for us. It is essential to our business, both to ensure we have the capital to fund future growth and to give peace of mind to our customers that we can meet our commitments to them. At the end of 2021, the estimated Solvency II group investor capital cover ratio was 216%, compared to 190% at the end of 2020. The Solvency II group regulatory review capital cover ratio also increased to 173%. Estimated solvency surplus on both the group investor and regulatory review was £2.8 billion compared to £2.3 billion last year. The capital ratios have increased due to favourable economic movements in 2021, driven by positive equity and property returns, as well as rises in yields. But they have also been supplemented by management actions, including additional equity hedges taken out during the year. So in a bit more detail, moving on to page 12, the waterfall chart shows the movement in the investor view of the group's solvency surplus over 2021. As I mentioned just now, the group's solvency surplus increased from £2.3 billion to £2.8 billion by the end of 2021. The contribution from all of our existing businesses offset the strain from writing new business, as well as supporting continued strategic investment during the business. The surplus generated from economic movements reflected high returns in equity and property investments, as well as increases in yields. Management actions led to a one-off increase in surplus of 22% and is a key driver for the increase in the cover ratio. As we disclosed in our half-year results, the additional equity hedging entered into in April 2021 accounts for around half of this increase. The remainder is attributed broadly equally between the move away from higher risk credit assets in the Royal London estate and the consolidation of the four closed funds into the main fund. Moving on to page 13 and the waterfall chart, which shows similar movements in the group regulatory review capital position. So I won't walk through it in detail. But our capital position is sensitive to a range of market insurance risk stresses, and the sensitivity allows us for a range of scenarios, and further information on the composition of our investment portfolio are set out in the appendix of this presentation. The results of the sensitivity analysis shows that the group's capital position is not materially impacted, even in the event of significant external market volatility. Returning to the final page and to summarise. We are delivering to our strategy. We have seen positive performance across the group with our UK asset management and Irish businesses, all delivering increased operating profit and new business volumes. Assets under management reached a record £164 billion, supported by a strong investment performance track record and positive market movements. We have started to take positive action on the path, delivering our short-term and long-term investment portfolio carbon reduction targets, as we focused on protecting our customers' standards of living now and in the future. Our balance sheet strengthened during the year, giving us the flexibility to fund growth and strategic investment, whilst also allowing us to maintain profit share rates for eligible customers, boosting their savings for a sixth year in a row. We are focused on growing across all our chosen markets, while continuing to deliver quality products and excellent customer service for our customers and the financial advisors we work in partnership with. Thank you for listening. I and the team would be delighted to take any questions you may now have, and I'll hand back over to the call coordinator to begin the Q&A session.
Thank you very much, everyone. Your question and answer session begins now. If you wish to ask a question, please key star 1 on your telephone, unmute your device, and make sure that you're not muted, please. Our first question is coming from the line of Marcus Rivaldi. Please proceed, Marcus. Your line is open now.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. Thanks for the presentation. Lots of questions actually today. Maybe some big picture ones, please. Can I get some reflections from you about what the Solvency II reforms may mean for Royal London going forward? And then specifically on the results today, you talk about, I think, persistency in the individual pensions business. I think you're sort of touching there on maybe sort of pressures from the cost of living crisis for many of your savers there. I was wondering if you could maybe talk about your thoughts around that and whether what that means. I know you're holding an existing provision, but whether you feel those provisions are adequate going forward. And then finally, if you could just talk a little bit more, please, about the momentum in the protection business. I think clearly you're linking that to COVID, but if you could talk a little bit more about that, that'd be fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, morning, Marcus. Thank you. So why don't I just start with a reflection on solvency reforms, then I'll ask Hans to add to it. I mean, so in terms of the solvency reforms themselves, I mean, we welcome the clarity that is coming out now from the government. Obviously, there's a degree to go with the ongoing consultation with HMRC and detail from the PRA later in the year. Obviously, a lot of the open debate is in respect of the matching adjustment and the fundamental spread in particular. Neither of those are of great materiality to Royal London, given we've only just started a matching adjustment portfolio, so the materiality perspective is not hugely relevant. Then that uncertainty I don't think applies to us. But Anne, do you just want to give a flavour of potential impacts for the other changes on the risk margin in particular?
Yeah, so the risk margin, I think, the as you say, Dan, definitely the risk margin reform is welcomed. I think for Royal London, even if we went with the more extreme of the two scenarios that the PRA tested at the back end of last year, there would not be a material impact on Royal London. A lot of the risk margin reduction gets offset by a reduction in the Solvency II transitional, particularly in the closed funds. But I think that benefit does become more material over time as new business is written on those revised terms, and so therefore that's why I think it's welcome. But generally speaking, Dan, yeah, there's not much impact for all of them.
So then your second question on persistency, which I think potentially impacts both individual and workplace pensions. I mean, I think there's obviously a question as to cost of living increases, reductions in disposable income, how that will play out in the context of individuals choosing to pause their contributions, or otherwise we are cognizant of that. You'll have seen, if you go back to 2020, you know, our persistency experience was actually pretty good, and we've continued to see that through elements of 2021, but quite how that plays out into the future is obviously uncertain. That said, you know, what we are seeing is relatively significant new entrants into our workplace pensions business in particular, and those contributions are in part being funded by employers. So we are monitoring it. We are cognizant of it, and as you referenced, we have a provision in our balance sheet, both in terms of our core assumptions and the £30 million provision that we put in the balance sheet at the end of 2020, which we have retained at the end of 2021. But we are monitoring that regularly, but obviously we'll have to see how the year pans out. Well, one of the things, particularly from an employer perspective, we are talking to some of our schemes around, is the extent to which, as there is a squeeze on disposable income, making sure that people are taking the best advantage of how they contribute into a pension scheme, and in particular where they're doing it through salary sacrifice, pre-VNI changes, etc. And then finally, on your comment on momentum and protection, so you're right, I think we've clearly referenced, as we've been through the last 2 years, the impact of COVID on protection and the fact that it's increased awareness of it. I think if I read through into your question is, do we expect that momentum to continue? I think the answer is, in large part, yes. And you know, we have continued to make changes to our product offering throughout the year to make sure it remains relevant. One of the things that we will consider during 2022 is the extent to which we allow policyholders to defer premiums, as we did during COVID, to provide some flexibility in that as well. But we haven't yet made those decisions as we stand.
Okay. Can I just come back on? That's really good. Can I just back on the Solvency II reforms? I just maybe this isn't applicable, but I saw, you know, John Glenn's speech. He talked about one of the potential reforms is broadening the liabilities eligible for matching adjustment, and I'm just wondering whether that has any implications for your business at all.
Yeah, so I mean, we funded, as I said, an initial portfolio which is currently at £450 million and growing. We have a good flow of assets from the CIS book into that, so we pretty much know what our new business stream looks like. So we've got a projection of the asset portfolio going forward. We are exploring additional asset classes. So at the moment, as I said, it's primarily credit, and it's actually UK credit and commercial real estate loans. We will broaden that out from UK credit as a first step, obviously subject to approval. I think the two bits we're probably most interested in, one is a more streamlined approval process. If you're sat in the movie, you're smiling slightly. That's as I'm sure everyone's aware, the process for approval of some of these things, which are relatively vanilla asset classes, is probably more onerous than we would like. So I think we're keen to see that change go through, which will allow us to move more quickly as classes change. I think the second question is the extent to which we would be looking to use the portfolio to invest in longer-term alternative assets, as we've seen some of our peers referencing. In reality, I don't think our portfolio is going to be of a sufficient size to warrant that in the short term, but we will be looking at that from other perspectives. So we have a property portfolio behind the Govan range and other aspects that is coming close to £10 billion now, and we're expanding that team. And it may well be that we're looking at some alternative property-related assets that might be the route that we use to look at that kind of asset class. Does that help, Mark?
Yeah, and that, but also, well, there's no other sort of blocks of liabilities that currently don't benefit from MA that might benefit from it going forward, or
there are. So that's what we're exploring. So when I referenced all other opportunities earlier in the presentation, so we have got some blocks of annuities and some of the other funds that we are looking at the extent to which we can move those across as well. But they don't fundamentally change the scale.
Okay.
Quickly, to come back to your point about the assets we can put in. So we are at, there will be, so I referenced some one-off benefits in 2021. I would expect that to continue for a couple of years as we do for more and more of the bit.
Thank you.
There's no more questions in the queue. Just a quick reminder, everybody, if you wish to ask a question, please key star 1 on your telephone, and please make sure you're not muted. We have another question coming from the line of Marcus Rivaldi. Marcus, your line is live.
Thank you. I'm sorry if you don't mind me just jumping in again. Again, this is a question I think previously that we've had is on the capital build and the sustainability of that. Now, obviously, you've had this year some very positive economic movements, obviously very positive management actions, but if we, and maybe also the strategic development costs coming down, which is good, but I guess if you're thinking about a more sustainable basis, and I appreciate the stock of capital is also very high, you probably want to be seeing, you know, new business, existing business, at covering corporate financing costs and the profit share on a sustainable basis. I mean, is that the way you think about it? And is that something that we should increasingly expect to see in future years based upon the action you've been taking? Thank you.
Yeah, so Mark, the answer is yes, but probably with a couple of caveats, which I'll explain. But at a broad level, yes. I think if you do a comparison of our waterfall that we presented compared to the last few years, you will see that mix having had changed quite substantially, which we have been very focused on doing. And you're right, we're certainly not relying on on economic variances, although our assumptions behind some of that are relatively prudent in the UK GAAP balance sheet. They're fully market consistent in a Solvency II balance sheet. The caveat I was referencing is just in the context of workplace pensions in particular, the nature of the product lends itself to a quite high capital strain in year one, which some of which starts to unwind relatively quickly as we see transfers and of previous pensions and the contributions ramp up. But certainly when you write new policies, that initial capital strain is quite high. So that would be my only caveat to it. It's quite a quick turnaround between the two, but that is certainly the intention we're looking at. And the shift in presentation to break out the management actions from other elements was intended to try and help provide that. And we'll continue to refine that as we go forward.
Okay, great stuff. And then if I may just follow up a couple of other questions. So first of all, can you touch on if you've got any guidance you can give or about IFRS 17 and the impact on the group? And then just finally, you mentioned obviously in your remarks around ESG and your engagement on energy transition, but any thoughts or comments about what you're doing from an ESG perspective around the Russia-Ukraine situation, please?
Yes, so why don't we do that in reverse order, and then I'll ask Leslie just to reference IFRS 17 quickly and hopefully reassure you. In terms of Russia and Ukraine, so we have approximately £90 million as at the 24th of February of assets in Russian and Ukrainian equities and other assets. Those are all held in unit-linked funds, or materially all held in unit-linked funds, but a very, very small proportion. And those unit-linked funds are tracker funds. So to the extent to which we can sell them, the theory would be that they follow the tracker funds. Obviously, given events of the last few days and what the indices are doing, we would be looking to actively sell those assets, but that requires us to be able to sell them. We are also monitoring the portfolio for the significant stocks with a significant proportion of revenues based in Russia. Some of those entities we have zero holdings in, which actually links to the ESG tilts we put in, which has allowed us to make some active decisions on top of what were previously passive funds, and we had already moved some of our holdings to 0% for some of those, although they're technically not Russian assets, but they had a link through. So we are actively monitoring that, and hopefully that gives you some comfort about the steps that we have been taking thus far, but they are very small holdings. Leslie, do you want to just cover IFRS 17?
Yeah, so we actually moved from IFRS to UK GAAP for our statutory reporting at year end 20. So we do not have to adopt IFRS 17 when it comes in for IFRS reporters because we're reporting the UK GAAP. And then for solvency purposes, obviously our actuarial liabilities and capital is in accordance with Solvency II, so there's no impact from a capital perspective either.
On
IFRS 17 coming in.
Okay.
What do we need, Marcus? Better on?
That's great. Thank you very much.
Are there any other questions?
No, there's no more questions in the queue at the moment.
Okay. Well, in which case, thank you everybody for joining this morning and thanks for the questions. As ever, though, if there's anything people want to discuss further, Rob and his investor relations team are always available. But appreciate your time this morning and I'll let you get back to your day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone. This concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you so very much for joining and enjoy the rest of your day.